So on August 21st, Adams County Health Department notified the Illinois Department of Public Health of two cases of Legionnaire's disease among residents at a long-term care facility. Upon notification of the second case, Adams County and IDPH worked together to implement public health interventions to decrease aerosolization around the residents of the two cases, both of whom lived in the same residence building. Decorative fountains were turned off, and the use of the showers that the cases had used was discontinued. So this is just an image of the facility campus. As you can see, it's quite large. It was built in 1886. It encompasses 43 buildings and 210 acres. At any given time, there's around 400 residents there, and care ranges from independent living to skilled nursing, and it maintains all of its own utility systems. So after the outbreak was identified, the long-term care facility closely monitored residents for illness, and additional cases were quickly identified in other residence buildings on campus. Residents with pneumonia or any respiratory symptoms were tested with the Legionella urinary antigen test, and whenever possible, respiratory specimens were collected for culture and molecular testing at CDC. So on August 26, hot water restrictions were instituted for the entire facility, which included using only bottled water for the bathing and drinking by residents and staff. Bulk water sampling was conducted, with samples being collected from the cooling tower fountains, the hot water tanks, and select whirlpool tubs and shower heads. On August 27th, remediation of the cooling tower began, and on August 30th, a team of Epidemic Intelligence Services officers from CDC were invited to aid with the investigation. So case counts rapidly increased, and more residential buildings were affected, and two potential sources of exposure were identified. The first was the cooling tower that was located on campus, and such a rapid increase in cases with an epi curve is highly suggestive of cooling tower exposure of Legionella, which typically develops quickly, but will also decrease or disappear rapidly, either naturally or with remediation. However, potable water was another potential source and could have led to an aerosolized exposure through therapeutic bathing tubs, decorative fountains, sink faucets, or showers. So epidemiologic data was collected by Adams County and IDPH staff, and cases and nurses were interviewed with a questionnaire customized to the facility and the outbreak. Chart abstractions were also performed at the long-term care facility and at the local hospital where patients were admitted. An outbreak-specific case definition was developed, which helped to differentiate between Legionnaire's disease and Pontiac fever. And this helped to ensure case definitions were appropriately applied and that case line list and counts were correct and consistent over time and across partners in the investigation. So in total, there were 53 confirmed cases of Legionellosis that were identified, 47 were long-term care facility residents, and 6 were long-term care facility staff members. The median age was 85 years, and 77% were male. 12 deaths occurred, all among long-term care facility residents, that resulted in overall 23% mortality. And 24 long-term care facility residents were hospitalized with a mean length of stay of 5 days. Cases and attack rates were evenly distributed across campus, and the wide and relatively even distribution of cases throughout the facility grounds and the residence buildings provided additional support for exposure by potable water and/or the cooling tower. So on September 9th, remediation of the potable water system began. The water supply was hyperchlorinated and was flushed throughout the system and was a multi-day process requiring extensive manpower from the public health and environmental team. So this is the final epi curve for the outbreak. The shaded area depicts the 14 days post-hot water restrictions that were implemented on August 26th and the cooling tower remediation that was on August 27th. So the 14 days is when we expected to actually see cases. And so the final case had an onset of September 18th, which was within 14 days of the potable water remediation that occurred on the 9th and 10th. So even though water restrictions were implemented, it was possible that residents could use potable water, and we think maybe this resident was exposed after using potable water after restrictions were in place. So the CDC performed sequence-based typing of the environmental and human isolates. Matched isolates were Legionella pneumophila serogroup 1, sequence type 36, which was the strain responsible for the original 1976 Legionnaire's disease outbreak and is considered to have increased virulence potential. Matched isolates came from two autopsy specimens, the cooling tower as well as multiple points throughout the potable water supply, and this is the evidence needed to implicate the cooling tower and the potable water as the source of the outbreak. So this outbreak presented multiple epidemiologic and environmental challenges, including the sheer size of the facility, which made data collection a particularly challenging task. Several residents also tested positive by urine antigen but had no clinically compatible symptoms, highlighting the importance of utilizing a sound case definition and also to avoid testing individuals who were had not clinically compatible symptoms. And finally, this investigation would not have been successful without the careful communication and extensive efforts carried across the many different partners who worked on this investigation. Thank you.
Thank you. So this concludes, and then we will have some time for Q&A. Again, would like to thank all the presenters. Sorry for my being really inept with working that machine. But I, again, thank you. It's really hard to squeeze such great information into 5 minutes. So I think we can start Q&A.
Hi, this is Jonas from Oregon. This is a question for Dr. Yaffe. Thank you for the talk. I'm curious, what was the impetus for the maybe you mentioned this, but what was the impetus to institute the screen for the VIM?
So in terms of the VIM-producing CRE, actually the initial isolates found in the neonatal ICU came out of a previous MRSA outbreak investigation, so the neonates were already having enhanced surveillance, and then some of the VIMs were caught, and so then we started the enhanced surveillance across the rest of the hospital ICUs.
Hi, Holly Simpson from New Mexico. I have a question in regards to the CRE outbreak at the long-term acute care hospital. How were you able to achieve staff cohorting, especially with respiratory therapists, because it seemed like that was a relatively small hospital. In New Mexico, we had an outbreak of CRE recently, and staff cohorting, that was one thing that they were unable to achieve.
The staff cohorting, I think, was probably one of the biggest challenges. And when we actually went back and outside of the scope of this this presentation, we looked at some of the clusters of genetically related folks, and we thought that we hypothesized that breaks in cohorting could be responsible for some transmission across floors. How did we achieve it? They had multiple respiratory therapists, and at some point, you know, the facility I think reacted very strongly. They were very alarmed at how quickly they uncovered, you know, more cases. And by the time we conducted our site visit, about a month after the initial clinical cultures were positive, they had already instituted cohorting respiratory therapists, and we actually sat and kind of observed them, and we found pretty good infection control measures there. I'll mention that the RT who was assigned to the CRE positive patients had more experience on the job.
I have a quick question for you, Sam, while you're here. Were any of those patients or cases with CRE, were they transferred? And if they were, did you identify any other clusters elsewhere?
We have not identified any other clusters. They were transferred out, even some to other states. In fact, there is one likely transmission event that occurred in another state with one of these patients. This was sometime after the initial 23 groups. But the tracking the patients and making sure the proper notification was being done, the local public health really spent a lot of time and effort doing this. And based on sort of reports, because a lot of these people go outside their county, but based on reports that we found, we haven't seen any sort of additional transmission or events at other facilities.
Sarah Janelle, Colorado. Andrew, these questions are for you. Great presentations. For the CRE isolate submission, what was the reasoning behind excluding Enterobacter isolates?
For excluding Enterobacter isolates?
Yeah, were only E. coli and Klebsiella included?
Oh, for susceptibility?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not actually sure. I didn't really work on the creation of the definition. I don't know if either Erica or Angela are able to answer that question. They both work on the XDR registry in Illinois.
So we just went based off of our CRE definition, and we only accept E. coli or Klebsiella based on susceptibility testing results, and that kind of has to do with the epi in our state.
Have you identified any carbapenemases and enterobacters?
Yes, we have identified enterobacters with like KPC.
Okay, but only E. coli and Kleb are reported to XDRO.
Based on susceptibility.
Yes. Hi, Marcelo from LA County. I have another question on the CRE outbreak on LTAC facilities. There was a slide referring to the interfacility communication mm-hmm. between hospitals. I would like to know what the purpose of the analysis was and how it was produced.
So I'd like to clarify. That was that's a data visualization of some CMS transfer data that we received for all of California. We restricted it to 6 counties mm-hmm. For the purposes of that illustration. We didn't conduct any analysis okay. with that data. We at least for this project, we actually have used it in the past to look at facilities that are having an outbreak and looking just at those facilities that have connections with the outbreak facility. But really, the reason I put that visualization there was to illustrate sort of just how much transferring was going on and what they were really dealing with. And I will also mention that actual graphic was developed as part of a CRE collaborative that we're instituting in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And really that's part of this coordinated approach that we want to take. Starting to see a number of outbreaks, clusters, cases in the Bay Area, we think now is a perfect time to start something like a collaborative.
Okay, thank you.
Eisen from Nevada. It's again about the Legionella outbreak. Certainly, after the remediation of the cooling tower and the water system, we have no new cases. But do you really have any recommendation of how frequently we need to remediate the system? Are we really going to wait for new cases to appear after a year or two?
Right.
Because there is no clear recommendation how frequently we need to decontaminate or remediate the system.
Right. I don't have any recommendations. I do know that the facility, because it was so old, they did spend quite a bit of money after this outbreak redoing their water system. So hopefully that will help with the long term and preventing this from happening again. But I don't really know what the recommendations would be for continued remediation and testing.
Yeah, we really saw facilities after complete remediation and environmental sampling, which were negative, they came up with new cases after 3 years.
Right.
So, again, but
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Great presentation.
Thanks for the question.
So I think we can take the last two questions, and pending, maybe we can take one more.
Okay, my question is for Sam from California. I wanted to know about how you determined which staff to screen.
Staff?
Didn't you screen staff in the hospital?
No, we didn't screen any
oh.
staff. Oh, sorry,
okay,
if that
so
was
I
unclear.
Misunderstood that.
Yeah.
Really?
We didn't screen any staff. We cohorted staff.
Okay. Was it the other presentation? Did I get them mixed up?
I think they're...
I
think
no,
it may have been
then
the Kentucky.
I misunderstood the slide.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No problem.
One more question about Legionnaires. Hi, Isaac Benowitz from New York City. People love asking questions about Legionnaires' disease. I was just wondering about was it like 23% mortality? That's really high. I was
right.
just wondering, once you recognized that there was an outbreak, were you able to do any clinical surveillance or interventions to try to head that off?
Oh, Whitney, you're shaking your head right now. Like, do you have an idea? Yeah. Whitney was a CSD fellow who worked on the investigation with me. it happened so fast. A lot of these people were hospitalized, including some of the employees from the facility. But obviously, this was just a very at-risk population. I mean, some of these people were in their 80s and 90s, and, you know, and some of them are also, like, in like end of life care. So it was just a population that would be more likely to succumb to Legionella. So
thanks.
Yep.
We have 2 more minutes. Someone asked one question. It's about the transfusion transmitted infections. And the question I have is the aggregate data reported back to the processing blood center? Because I know for platelets, they go through a pre-microbiology screening. Mm-hmm. So is there a sense that may be an effective for actually screening platelets for microbiological contamination?
Well, I think it's a great idea to feed it back to the blood centers. I mean, they're encouraged to form groups in NHSN to do that. AABB has a group for that purpose in terms of quality control. But individual blood centers also are encouraged, but so far they haven't done that yet. It's a good idea.
Okay, thank you. So I think that concludes, though I have one question for Ashley. I was hoping to squeeze it in here. So I know in Tennessee, it's MRSA is, and all your reports are publicly reportable, and you also have technical and consumer templates. So I just didn't know if you communicated this specifically to the consumer audience regarding the change in protocols.
So we actually have chosen not to publish our 2015 data yet, partially for that reason, and also with the other HAIs and the protocol changes, we've seen some other really significant changes. We are hoping to delay actually reporting out our 2015 data until we have the new baselines from NHSN. Thanks.
Thank you, everyone, for attending. Thank you, presenters.